case of the morning is Garcia Meza against Mukasey.
Mr. Aguja.
Please don't touch the microphone.
Good morning, Your Honor. Please the court. For the record, my name is Manny Aguja on behalf of the appellant Carlos Garcia Meza. The issue that we have here this morning is that legal term that the courts have been struggling very hard, the issue of crime of moral turpitude. When does a conviction qualifies as a crime of moral turpitude, and when does it not? Now, the INA 237A2AI states that if an alien is convicted of crime of moral turpitude and within 5 years after his admission, he is removable if the sentence imposed on him is 1 year, or maybe imposed on him is 1 year or more. The issue today is the crime of Mr. Carlos Garcia Meza. The crime of moral turpitude, normally as the criminal courts have defined and as the immigration courts have defined, are those acts that are so vile, so depraved, so base that they affront our moral consciousness, as opposed to those that are mala prohibita or mala prohibitum, which are just bad because they are against the rules or statutes. Now, the appellant was convicted of an aggravated battery in that, according to the information, he knowingly caused a physical physical contact against a police officer in the exercise of his duties, a physical activity that caused insult of insulting nature. My contention here to your honors this morning is that the charge that that the appellant was convicted of does not rise to the level of crime of moral turpitude. Under Illinois statutes, a battery for which he was charged has two prongs. Number one is one that knowingly or intentionally making causing bodily harm, or number two, making physical contact knowingly or intentionally that of insulting or provoking nature. Appellant was charged under the second prong. He was charged and he pled guilty to a charge of making physical contact of insulting nature. And because it was against a police officer under Illinois statute 12-4B6, it became aggravated. My contention here is the second prong a counterpart of the Illinois law is so low that it cannot be considered so vile, so base, so depraved that all those actions should be classified as criminal crime of moral turpitude or CMT, such that we should deport them or remove them. In my example, it takes very little to be...
That's an argument one could make to the board. But why is the board's understanding of the statute a reasonable one?
The words are unreasonable. It is unreasonable because the mere activity, the facts of the case in Mr. Garcia's case is so low. He only grabbed and twisted the fingers of the police officer. The board, confirming the trial court, relied on the Dinesh case, there, which has extremely different fact scenario. There, the Iranian was convicted of physical injury, bodily harm. Violence was involved. A knife was instrument of knife was involved. Of course, it was against the police officer in the exercise of his duties. Nowhere does the Carlos Garcia Meza come approximate that situation. And for the BIA and for the trial court to equate the facts of this case is just totally, it boggles the imagination. As I have said, it takes very little to be convicted of aggravated battery under the citations that I have cited. If I'm in traffic court and I poke a police officer at the back and I say, hey, fat, so you could stand to lose some weight, That would qualify as a crime, as a an aggravated battery.
I don't see how, because it's not a battery at all, as you've just described.
Your Honor, it's a battery in the sense that there is making of physical contact, there is an insulting nature, it is against a police officer in the exercise of his duties. That would qualify as a aggravated battery. Now, should we stamp that, the second part of battery, should we stamp those activities?
Now, every time you say, should we do X, you're avoiding what seems to me the central question in this case. What is the scope of discretion enjoyed by the immigration appeals? We don't make the decision, is it?
Your Honor,
of the things the Supreme Court keeps saying is that when discretion is given to the board, it has the authority to be harsh. Let's assume it's being harsh here, but why is that outside its authority? That's what worries me here.
Again, like I said, Your Honor, the Supreme Court, this circuit has had a chance to discuss this issue about crimes of moral turpitude in a decision by Judge Posner in the May v. Ashcroft. In that case,
It doesn't matter who writes the decisions of this court.
Yes, Your Honor. In that case, the court said that where the decision, because there is no specific definition of what constitutes a crime of moral turpitude from Congress, from the immigration laws, we will have to go on a case-by-case basis. And in this particular case that the judge ruled, Seventh Circuit ruled, it mentioned about character of the crime, of the conviction, the gravity, the atrociousness or the offense, the affront to our moral conscience, the moral significance, which in the conviction of Carlos Garcia Meza is absent. I mean, it would just be so overreaching if every time a person has a very low misdemeanor, a very low battery, is this the kind of action that we would like to stamp as a crime of moral turpitude, that we have to remove these people? Again, like I said, there are two parts to this. I would understand if the Seventh Circuit, if the courts would label those that are causing bodily injury, as in the case of the Dinesh case that they rely, that those are indeed crimes of moral turpitude. We don't want lawlessness. We don't want disrespect. That is intentional and that was that involved violence. But for a very low crime of causing physical contact of insulting nature, that would just be too much to remove Mr. De Meza because we labeled it as a crime of moral turpitude. If the court does not have any more questions, I'll reserve time for rebuttal.
Thank you very much. Jolly.
May it please the court. My name is Lance Jolly, and I represent the Attorney General of the United States. A crime involving moral turpitude is a crime in which the conduct is contrary to justice, good morals, and the duties
of... And the judgment of the Board of Immigration Appeals. I have no idea what justice and good morals. At least I can figure out what the Board of Immigration Appeals says.
Right. And the aggravated battery of a police officer shows the deliberate disregard of the duties owed to society in general.
Well, can you cite any BIA or federal court decision where assault or battery on an officer that did not require bodily harm was held to be a crime of moral turpitude?
Well, the case in May versus Ashcroft was the aggravated fleeing of a police officer. There was no injury in that case. There was a risk of injury, at least cited in the case, And similarly, in this case, all we know is that there was a twisting of fingers, but There is certainly, because of the physical contact, there was a risk of injury in this case.
Well, you appear to concede that the BIA was wrong when it said that the Illinois battery statute requires bodily harm.
To the extent that the board considered it a requirement, yes.
How do we know they read the facts correctly? Then? Can we be comfortable?
The board expressly rejected Garcia Mez's argument that bodily injury was required, and so by extension, we can understand that it wasn't considering to the extent of that. The Seventh Circuit also held in Padilla that the obstruction of justice was a crime involving moral turpitude. In that sense, there was no bodily injury for a crime to involve moral turpitude.
What about the Third Circuit case, Partica, where there was a third-degree assault on an officer that included the reckless infliction of injury, and the court held there it wasn't a crime of moral turpitude and looked at the board's emphasis on the fact that it usually has to be a crime that involved evil intent or malicious motives, that kind of thing, and they held that the mere reckless infliction of bodily harm was not enough.
I'm not totally familiar with the case, but as you stated, it was based on the recklessness. Specific intent is inherent in the crime for which he was convicted of, which is the aggravated battery of a police officer.
But the Illinois statute doesn't even require bodily harm. So you're just saying, the prong he was convicted under.
Garcia Meza specifically intended to grab and to make the physical contact in a provoking and insulting manner.
But I thought he pled guilty to the alternative prong, makes physical contact of an insulting or provoking nature.
Yes. I'm not sure if I understand the confusion here. In matter of Fuulau, my pronunciation is abhorrent, but it clarified the board's prior decision in Danish in saying that the assault on the police officer was the key element in the for it to constitute a crime involving moral turpitude. This court has said that in May versus Ashcroft, it stated that it didn't reach which level of discretion it should attribute to the board's decisions in such manner. We would have this court follow the Third Circuit case in Napnick, which said that the crime involving moral turpitude goes to the heart of the administrative process in this, and so the board should be granted discretion.
Discretion to do what? I'm perfectly comfortable with the idea that Congress passes a statute giving the board authority to define completely. But suppose the board, in one case, we define murder to be a crime of moral turpitude. And then Illinois comes along and it defines spitting at a police officer, using the word in a good Humpty Dumpty-ish way. I use a word, it means exactly what I want it to, neither more nor less. So Illinois defines spitting at a police officer as murder. The board then says, well, we've held that murder is a crime of moral turpitude. You have to states. Would that be a sensible exercise of the board's discretion?
That's a good question.
But that's really the question my two colleagues are asking. If the board says aggravated battery of a police officer is a crime of moral turpitude, and the board is thinking that anybody who beats up a cop in the course of his official duties is a pretty bad guy, but it turns out he hasn't beaten up the police officer, just spat at him, for example, called him a dirty name.
Well, in People versus Hale, the case by the Illinois Supreme Court involved the punching of a police officer, though no harm was resultant. And the Supreme Court wanted to extend the protection to the police officers in this regard. And in a similar vein, the board's decision follows in step with the state Supreme Court's decision.
So just go ahead.
I'm worried about the Humpty Dumpty problem.
Yeah. And I have another hypothetical. Yeah. That's what I was going to ask. You know, what if you have a situation where, you know, somebody's angry at being given a parking ticket, crumples up the parking ticket, throws it down, it hits the officer's foot. I mean, is that a crime of moral turpitude?
Contact, and I acknowledge your hypotheticals. The problem with that is that the question is, is it categorically?
My question, Judge Williams, are not entirely clear yet. Maybe the board has the power to say that throwing a crumpled up ticket at a police officer is a ground of removal, or spitting at a police officer, or calling him a dirty name and blowing on him to fog his glasses, or something like that. But if the board thought that it was actually doing something else, which is to say people who beat up police officers are committing a crime of moral turpitude, the fact that the states have different naming conventions, that Illinois defines as aggravated battery something that a different state would define under a different classification, may mean that the board has not actually recognized what it is doing. Submitting itself to Humpty Dumpty, perhaps too easily.
The categorical approach limits, I'm not sure the Humpty Dumpty approach is before this court at this time. The categorical approach, you're limited to the actual conviction.
You figure out what the elements of the offense are. If you think back to the Armed Career Criminal Act and Taylor, which is the inventor of this categorical approach, Taylor said that for purposes of defining a crime of violence under Section 16B, generic burglary is a crime of violence, which it then defined, gave a federal definition of generic burglary, and said, and now we have to figure out on a categorical basis whether what a given state calls burglary, because the word differs across the state, meets the federal definition of generic burglary. And if the board had proceeded that way, it said, okay, generic aggravated assault on a police officer is a crime of moral turpitude, and we will now try to figure out whether Illinois meets the generic definition that we've just come up with. But is that what the board did here?
The board's decision may not be as explicit as this court would desire. But it did consider this statute, the conviction under this statute,
as
a deliberate.
Yeah, but the board looked at it and specifically thought that it required bodily harm. Didn't the board say it was wrong? Wasn't the board wrong when it said that the Illinois battery statute requires bodily harm?
It says it required harm, and the battery, to the extent that how it defines harm and applies harm in this case, it may or may not be correct. However, the petitioner has not raised this nuanced argument, and therefore it should be considered waived.
And then you raised this May case about the flight case, but that really was an aggravated situation. Wasn't that a high-speed chase? So there were really people at risk in that. That's not what our situation is like. I mean, I know you're arguing it by analogy, but it's easy to understand why that would be a crime of moral turpitude and why that would be a serious crime.
The grabbing and twisting of an officer's fingers while conducting official duties is a deliberate disregard of the law. As such, it is a serious crime.
The board hasn't said every deliberate violation of the law is a crime of moral turpitude. If it had said that, then we would have to ask whether that's within its discretion, and if so, you're free. But do you understand it to have said that?
That the statute limits it to physical contact of an insulting and provoking nature. Yeah.
Mr. Jolly, you know, we've gone over some hypotheticals, but this does pose a significant issue. And we had a rally and months ago. Estimates were maybe our reports of maybe a quarter. Crowd control was across the street from my courthouse. I mean, that's how big the crowds were in the street. And I can envision that there must have been a fair number of lawful residents out protesting. Because I'm sure there may have been some touching of officers, you know, at the perimeter trying to cabin the flow of the I'm for one concerned we could have on a day like that had a second category kind of nature by Mark. With a lot of these.
Whether such a situation would fall under the aggravated battery of a police officer would be in doubt in that hypothetical. Duenas-Alvarez and the Supreme Court decision instructs us that we don't deal with the theoretical possibilities.
I understand. And, but we do want to be comfortable that whatever that threshold is, that the reflecting on it, I guess that.
I think it did. It
what language do you think it did? Where's the language in the order where it did? Because it's not.
The fact that it rejected the bodily harm requirement presented by petitioner.
So by implication, you're saying it.
Yes.
Without making explicit findings or without providing any support for that.
The board in its decision making is not required to do an exegesis.
Right. I know it doesn't have to just lay it out all, but, you know,
it
connect
been,
all, but it has to
beneficial.
Connect some dots.
But the fact that it rejected the petitioner's prior arguments concerning that evidence that it considered is the second prong.
Thank you very much. Anything further, counsel?
Yes. The concern of the court about I think the big blunder of the BIA when they said that in every battery there has to be a physical harm. The Illinois Supreme Court Hale case specifically states that you can have a battery without involvement of a physical harm. I think that was the BIA misunderstood that word for the person harm, and the BIA it concluded that there has to be harm every time there is a battery, and I think that was the biggest error of which opposing counsel said we did not raise. They said it was a harmless error. That's why we brought out the Hale case. Now, in another case about the fleeing of the eluding of a police officer, like the court said, look at this. What is the moral significance here? Look at the danger. Look at the risk. When you're trying to flee and elude, you are concerned with the traffic in front of you.
Counsel, you're in a police station. You can't be grabbing police officers. In this setting, if we're going to talk about settings of fleeing and all that, a reasonable person knows that in that setting here, deliberate contact, not a
In fact, Your Honor, again, like I said,
he twisted two fingers. What if he twisted the arm? I mean, where is the gradations that we should ask the board to get involved in? I guess that's my.
Here, the opposing counsel mischaracterized as saying that Mr. Garcia, the appellant, intentionally the information and the plea that says knowingly there's a different distinction 12, 5, 6. distinguishes what is intentional, you aiming for a particular objective as opposed to knowing, you know the nature of your action and you know the attendant circumstances. Now, in a police station, of course, there's a lot of things going on. For all we know, the defendant here, he was asking the name of the police officer. He asked if his hand was showing. He tipped out of balance. He had to grab and twist the fingers. There's a lot of things. We are in a society where we had a lot of interaction. These things can happen, like your example. You know, we can be in a rally. We cannot be walking on eggshell nets. I think here, really, the case is just so low that to stamp every, even the second
Thank
part.
You. Thank you, counsel. The case is taken under advisement. The court will be in recess until next week.